We need to learn how to be women that apply his truth to our lives. And I'm convinced of all the things I know about the Lord, his truth is what's going to change you. It's the only thing that can ultimately change you. And if you're sitting here today feeling hopeless about something in your life, there is hope simply because the Lord has the ability to change what's going on in your life, to give you grace for it. Doesn't mean the circumstances are necessarily going to be different right away or happy or easy, but God will walk alongside you with that. So kind of start thinking, how did your week go? You don't have to answer this. Just be thinking that. Go, oh, I had a really easy week. Oh, I had a really hard week. So you might go, I don't know what I'm thinking. I talked to a gal once. I said, well, what do you think about that? And she said, you know, Mary, you think a lot more than I do. She said, I just don't think that deeply. And sometimes that is a real blessing. I have one friend that thinks that way, and she said, I'm really easy to, not easy to offend, because she said, nothing really bothers me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just think all the time. And I had someone tell me once, you're just one of the most pensive people I know. And I said, is that a good thing? I didn't even know it was in college. I mean, that was years ago. And I said, I don't even know what that means. But so think about your week and you are getting bombarded all week long. Think of social media. How connected are you to social media? Do you plug into that before you maybe even read your Bible in the morning? You're on your phone, on your computer, on Facebook. It's speaking to you. Maybe you work with people or just have people in your life that are constantly sharing things with you. That affects your thinking. Music. Maybe you go, oh, I only listen to K-Love. That's awesome. But you can also hear music that's not very encouraging. It starts to affect your thinking. Movies or books that you read. Like, oh, it doesn't matter what I read or what I watch. I can dismiss it. You can't. Chances are you see it or read it at night. You wake up thinking about it. You can't help it. It's this the way the Lord processes it. It affects you. And then, of course, Satan. And I just throw Satan out there because he is so subtle that he can use all the things I just mentioned to speak to you. It'd be nice if he just appeared in front of you and said, it's me, Satan, and I'm going to lie to you. And you'd go, oh, okay, then I'm ready to engage with you. But he's real subtle, he's real sneaky, and he uses all these other people and situations in your life to get you to listen. It says, Proverbs 23:7 says, as a man thinks within himself, so is he. So you are what you're thinking. You've been affected by your thinking this week. So I think women misunderstand this, and they can go, oh, it was just a thought. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't mean anything if I don't share it. Like, I can have this negative thought. I can have a discouraging thought. But if I don't tell anyone, then it doesn't really matter what I'm thinking. But it does matter what you're thinking. Sure, you don't want to say what you shouldn't, but you shouldn't be thinking what you shouldn't be thinking. Sounds kind of confusing, but I am going to explain myself. So thinking can also have the power to do these wonderful, amazing things, to draw you closer to the Lord, to uplift you to a place you go, oh, that is so encouraging. But you can't always get there if you started out down here. So there's a transition from you wake up and you go, I don't even want to get out of bed, to, oh, this is awesome. There's a transition that goes on there. So we're going to talk about it. So within thinking, there's potential conflict. And I was thinking there's probably more than this, but three areas. There's conflict towards yourself. You might be really hard on yourself. So you're having self-condemning thoughts. Maybe it's just based on your appearance or on your performance. Those two things can encapsulate most of your life. You don't like the way you look or you don't think you're doing something right. There's conflict toward others. And this is huge, and I'm going to talk about it a little more later. What do others think about me? Or even as importantly, what do I think about others? Are you not believing the best about them? Are you judging them? Maybe you don't realize you're doing it, but the thinking goes on in here. I'm sure she's thinking that about me because I know I've thought that about her. I mean, if we're going to be just really honest about it. And then also conflict even toward the Lord. How do you view the Lord? And just as importantly, how do you think he views you? It goes on in your head and it affects what you believe. So the side note on me even saying conflict, I deal with this a lot, with conflict between, mostly it's women and women. If it's like men, that's kind of Bill's deal. But I get pulled into a conflict. So whether you're going to, any of you admit it, I'm going to tell you I know that there's conflict between women and their relationships. So we're going to get into that. And I contemplated having people come up and do role playing. But then I thought women would probably go, I'm leaving, I don't want. Then I thought, well, I could call women up. And then I thought, no. So we're going to role play. But I was actually going to make Lori Raymer do it, but she's home with a little sick boy. So I said, that's okay, I'll just pretend. So I do want to talk about that because so many of you don't want to deal with conflict because you don't know how. It's not that hard. You just need to talk about it. So if you can think where your mind is during the course of this talk and go, oh, that's kind of where I can identify with that, I fall in with that, and then work on changing it, that's what I want to trust God for. If you can grow in it, then mission accomplished. So let's go ahead and pray, and then I'll get going. Lord, I want to thank you for this morning. I thank you for each woman that is here. I thank you, too, for the women I know that wanted to come and couldn't for different situations, that you'd work that out. Thank you, Lord, that we're able to record our talk this morning so other women will be able to hear it. Thank you for this building. I just think what a blessing it is to be in here on a cold day, having fellowship and time with you. Thank you for the hearts of the women that are here, eager to learn and grow in this area. We all struggle with it. You made our minds amazing things, and they need to honor you with what we think and then how we act with our thoughts. So we commit the time to you this morning. Ask you for it, that you'd speak to us. Speak to our individual situations that only you know about, that you want us to change and grow and trust you in those, that you offer hope for difficult situations and lives. Thank you that you're so good to us, and you speak to us, and you love us. Just commit the morning to you, Lord, and we ask for it in your Son's name. Amen. So, as I was thinking about these thoughts I've had on talks over the years, there's three books I'll recommend. Now, I'm only recommending these books behind the Bible. So don't ever say Mary Young told you to read a book before she told you to read your Bible, because I'm going to pound you later on the fact that you need to be reading your Bible. But these are three books that I would say have changed my thinking over the years. So the first one, and many of you have heard this, was Lies Women Believe and the Truth That Sets Them Free. Very powerful book by Nancy Lee DeMoss. I'm going to set that over here. Loving God with All Your Mind by Elizabeth George. And these are books I'd just go, oh my, there's truth in this. Some of them you're not going to want to hear. They're companions with the Bible. They're not in place of the Bible, but some of what I'm going to share dovetails with that. And of course, the ever famous Jesus Calling book. This is a daily devotional that is amazing. So those are the three books I'm going to reference, and I brought them because if you're like me, it's a visual thing. You go, I kind of want to see what we're talking about. So the Lies Women Believe book, this one, I'm just going to give you the premise. It's a powerful book. It's a little bit hard to read. Parts of it are because truth hurts. That's just all there is to it. And her belief, and I completely agree with it, is that we will listen to lies oftentimes before we listen to truth. We don't always know that we're doing that. But even half of a lie, even part of a lie, is a lie. And once you believe it, there's a course you're on that changes everything. So I thought I'd put an example with it. So first, we listen to a lie. That's her first point. You don't always know you're doing it, but you're listening to it. And sometimes these are huge, but I think huge lies, you go, oh, I can tell that's a lie. Who'd even believe that? It's those really little lies that trip you up, and it usually involves other people. So she says, and I thought this was somewhat painful, she said, listening to things that are not true is the first step toward ultimate bondage and death. And it's so easy to go, oh, I'll just listen to a little bit of something. It's not going to affect me, and it does. So here's the example. Your husband is late, and he didn't call you. So this isn't something any of you can relate to. I know. I'm just pulling this out from someone else's experience, okay? So you have no idea where he is, but you're starting to think, you know, he knows I needed him to be home on time tonight because I have a meeting to go to and he was supposed to watch the kids. He's probably doing this on purpose. And you think it's just a thought, but see, there was a lie introduced there and it's defaming your husband's character. So next, Nancy, the woman in that book, says you start to dwell on it. You start to mull on it and then you start to engage with Satan on it. You go, you know, this makes perfect sense because this is just like him to think he can quickly run to the gym after work before he comes home, even though he knows tonight was special. He can be so insensitive. And see, the lie's starting to grow. Not a major thing, but it's starting to affect your thinking. So thirdly, you now believe the lie. It begins to take root and starts to grow. Yeah, this is making perfect sense now. So then you start thinking about this poor man that hasn't even come home yet. He is so selfish. This is the tip of the iceberg. I can think of so many other areas that he's also selfish in. I am so mad at him. So now you got your emotions involved and you're starting to escalate that. Then she says we act on the lie. So what we believe can be seen in the way we live. Says Nancy, every area of bondage or act of sin in our lives can be traced back to a lie. So you're believing this lie. See, it was little to begin with. So what happens when your husband finally walks in the door? You let him have it. You just, because this is all, you got the whole thing, judge it up against him. You call him a few names, tell him how selfish he is, and you slam your door on the way out. And you never even ask him why he was late. It didn't matter because you had the whole thing figured out before he even got home. All based on a lie. So if you're believing a lie, what happens? You end up acting on the lie. So that is a lot of what Nancy's book is about. And some of them get pretty heavy in here about bigger lies, but that Satan's going to get a foothold. So that's, I wanted to mention that. So the premise of good old Elizabeth George, this one, is that only what's true is real. And at first I read this years ago, I thought, well, of course that's true. And I thought, well, yeah, that's true, but how often we believe what's false? We're not thinking what's true. So the bottom line is, if you can't filter out your untrue or wrong thinking, you're not going to know what's true. I know it's early, so stay with me because I'm going to explain that. So you are the one that has to bring the change in your thinking. And then that just quickly dovetails the whole premise of this book and why I love it so much. It's how to live in the presence of God. So during the day, what is it? We're capable women, we're busy, we're off doing stuff. Unintentionally, we leave God out of things. And why I love the way she writes and the verses that she shares is we need to bring Jesus back into our presence in order to change what? Our thinking and then our actions. So I think if we're honest, unless you guys want to raise your hand, I could call on you. We probably all have thinking that you go, yeah, it's not right. It's not what it should be. And I should have seen it coming when you'd prepare for a talk. I'll tell you this, I've known this. You'll get tested in the very thing you're going to talk about. And man, I had a doozy yesterday, and poor Bill was innocent. He was totally innocent, but I had the whole case built up against him before I even came home, and I went, oh, wait a minute, this is part of my talk. So, okay, so I'm going to share some examples, not that particular one, but our thinking's going to fall into the two categories. You're either believing lies or truth, and I know you want to say, oh, no, I'm believing something in between. No, it's either a truth or it's a lie, and if you're believing a lie, you need to recognize it as that, and if you're believing truth, then more power to you. So, do you know what affects your thinking? You might be one of these people that I mentioned before that don't think that much. So you can walk through this. Does conversations with other people get you? Maybe that's it, where you just go, I can't talk to another person. My mind is just spinning. Is it the movies or the books? You know, can you really watch that or read that and not be that the next day? Of course it affects your thinking. Things you go, I wish I hadn't seen that. I wish I hadn't read that, because it affects you. You will be affected by that. So ask yourself, what trips you up? Is it the big things? You know, can you handle if there's a big major, oh, your car was just smashed, or there's a big, you kind of go, okay, there it is. Is it relationships in your life? Maybe that's what's really hard for you is women, what are we? We're relational. I don't think many men would come to this talk if we had it, because men don't relate the same way. I mean, that's great. I'm not meaning it as a criticism. Men just aren't relational that same way, so their issues aren't going to be the same. We're heavily involved in each other's lives, and what happens when you're heavily involved in lives? There's conflict, there's misunderstanding, there's communication that needs to be worked on. Sometimes people respond to that more quickly than others. So do your thoughts, can you keep them in check? Would you go, oh, no problem, I have that thought, and I take it under control, and I'm doing what I need to do? Or do they completely affect the course of your day? I mean, how many of us have had something happen in the morning and the whole rest of the day is pretty much ruined because we're lost in our thoughts thinking, going, oh, you can't stop thinking about it. Sure, you're still doing everything else you need to do, but your mind is just wrapped up in some scenario. Maybe it's you go, oh, I don't think that person likes me. I know they don't think I'm parenting very well and I'm not a very good wife. And you think things based on nothing, but you're thinking these other people are thinking things. Maybe you just are discouraged. You're depressed. You think, I just want to unplug. I don't want to engage with people. I don't want to have to think. Maybe you're so hurt by what's going on in your life, you've put all this anger or feelings toward God. Your thought life is directed toward him, because how in the world could he let this happen to you? Maybe it's all thinking towards yourself. I can tend to be very critical about myself. I should have stayed up later, gotten up early, done more. I said to Bill, and some of you will laugh, this is such a small thing, but I had to process it this week. Since I've started working for the church, I have bought more store-baked cookies and things for my boys than I have ever in my life. And there's nothing wrong with that, but the way I was raised was you You love your family, you make it homemade. That's just the way I was raised. I love to bake, but the less time I have, the more I've thought, oh, Oreos won't hurt them, or we'll get them some Chips Ahoy, let's try this. They've had cookies they've never had before because this is kind of a new thing. But I had to engage with it in my head and go, that doesn't make me a bad mother. This, you know, it sounds like a small thing, but I had to have that dialogue, and I said to Bill, talk me off the ledge on this one because I'm feeling guilty that I'm now doing this instead of that. So again, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. It isn't always the major things that trip you up. It's the small things where you go, how do I think about this? So, and then with all that thinking, let's say you're sitting here processing it, how do you change it? So maybe you go, I know my stinking's wrong. My thinking is stinking. Well, there you go. It's wrong. How do I change it? Because if you don't change it or don't know how to change it, you're going to be in trouble. And so no matter what's on your mind, you can change it. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but there's hope, and this is all based on the Lord, that he's able to do that. So what I want to do is talk about a couple bigger areas that kind of trickle down to smaller areas, and then talk about some very specific, this person offended me, how do I deal with that? So in my Elizabeth George book, a big area of her wrong thinking, which she just labels wrong thinking, is the whole scenario of what ifs. So you might fall into this. I'm a what-if person because I can tend to worry. Some of you might go, never entertained that idea before. That's great. You can just stick with me on this. I'm going to give you some things to worry about this morning. So it's a huge area, and I see women stumble in this, and I'm including myself. When I say women, please know I'm including me, okay? So what if, and this happens late at night, early in the morning, in the car. What if something happens to my husband or my family? What if I lose my job? What if the lump I found is cancer? What if those people over there are talking about me? I didn't know if any teenage girls were going to be coming, and oftentimes some of these scenarios start in junior high and high school and carry on the rest. So we can still think that now. Is that a group of women talking about me? What if things don't work out the way I'd really like them to? What if they don't accept me? What if I look stupid? You know, I have that thought, and I'm, like I said, I'm almost 50 years old, and I still think that. What if I don't know the answer? I had to call a woman back the other day who marked on the bulletin she wanted more information on how to have a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ. And my first thought was, oh, I'm going to have Bill call her. What if she asks me something I don't know? That was honestly my first thought. I'm going to look stupid. How do I say to her, well, I know I'm supposed to call you, but I don't really have the answer for that. I kind of panicked for a minute, and I thought, oh. So I did my self-talk, which I'm going to tell you about, and kind of got it back where it needed to be. But that's the kind of stuff that can trip us up. It's just in your day. And the main problem with what ifs is you're imagining a scenario without God in it. You might not even realize that, but those things I just said about something happens to your family or you lose your job or you find out you have your cancer or someone's talking about you, what's the worst thing that you can imagine in those scenarios? Even if they came to be, it's that God isn't in it with you. And that is the problem right there, because all those things can happen. All of them can be difficult. But the fact that Jesus promises to walk through us with those is going to make all the difference in your thinking. So that's the first thing you need to realize. What ifs are not real. They seem real, and you act on them like they're real, but they haven't happened yet. They haven't. You're simply imagining them. So it's like that late night where you roll over in bed and you go, oh man, that really hurts. Yeah, I pulled something in my back. And you lay there, and then you get up and check on the internet because you're sure that ache or pain is a diagnosis of something, and by the morning you think, I really need to go to the ER because I've diagnosed during the night, and it all happens at night a lot of the time. But, and again, I'm not speaking from experience that I've done any of this, but the what ifs are not real, and they're awful because you're alone in them, and that's not true. It's just how you feel about it. So ask yourself, in those situations, what's real right now? What do I actually know is real right now? And as you start to weed your thinking out, you start to realize, I'm believing a lie. I totally thought this was real. It has not happened yet. You can paint a whole scenario, and it's just in your mind. So women are not considering what is true. So you need to retrain your thinking. So I say calm down. Usually in these situations, you feel kind of keyed up about it. So it's like this recent email I sent to somebody. They'd asked for my input on something. And so I wrote it, not gossiping or talking about the person, but it was simply, I involved a third person to say, here's your answer to your question. And I read it, and I thought, nope, that sounds really good. Would I read it in front of that other person? You bet I would. So I sent it. The minute I sent it, I thought, oh, that didn't come across right. I'm sure they're going to take it wrong. They're going to think, oh, they're going to think Mary Young is talking bad about that person. And I started to stew on it, and I thought, oh, I know for sure how he's going to take it. And I've started to realize when you communicate with men, I'm finding out they don't they're not as attuned to some of the details. Like I'll say to someone later, did you take that the wrong way? And they go, I don't even know what you're talking about. They're not tracking the same way. So I started even go, okay, look, I was written to a guy. Maybe he's not even going to. But the horrible thoughts were, he's thinking this about me. I just had it. Based on what? The fact that I'd sent an email that I said I was willing to read to the third-party person. So I just stewed on it, and I assumed the worst. It bothered me, and he didn't respond to the email. So I thought, well, sure. His silence means he's probably calling Bill to say, I got this flaming email from your wife. All these thoughts, and it wasn't that at all. Turns out he'd had a busy day, been away from his computer, and when he responded later, it was, yep, got your text or your email. Sounds great. And I thought, I wasted so much of my day, not meaning to, but I was anxious as I washed the dishes. Everything I did was colored by this stupid email based on what if he took it the wrong way. So you have to remember, what you think doesn't make it true. So I have this wonderful quote that I wanted to read, that even if the bad situation happens, it doesn't, like I said, mean you're going through it alone. That's where you've got to remember the Lord is in it with you. So Francis de Sales said, the same everlasting Father who cares for you today will take care of your tomorrow and every day. Either he will shield you from suffering, or he'll give you the unfailing strength to bear it. Be at peace then, and put aside all anxious thoughts and imaginations. I actually have this cross-stitched in my kitchen because my mom knows I'm like this, and she cross-stitched it for me years ago because I am that kind of pensive person. And so I think the point here that I want to make is that even if the fear you have comes to pass, the what-if scenario, more than the email that was misconstrued, the bigger ones, even if that happens, the Lord is with you in it. And I thought of this for my own life. My dad died a number of years ago. It was like 8 years, Linda. I think it's actually coming up on 9. And so my mom, we live in Utah. My mom lives in Iowa. My sister lives in Indiana. So nobody lives anywhere close to my mom. So when he died, as we walked through that grief and the what ifs, probably the worst scenario I started imagining was, what if my mom has health issues? What do we do if she needs us and we're not there? And, take your thoughts captive. But 3 years ago this February, she got a staph infection that they didn't know where it came from or even to diagnosis. The call I got was, my high school friend was taking her to the hospital because my mom had called her and she couldn't even walk. I said, are you kidding me? And then the nurse called me and said, your mom's going septic. You're probably going to want to come home, which is how my dad started his process, was he'd gone septic, and then 6 weeks later, he died. And so my sister and I, she drove home, I flew home, and told my brother, we'll go home first and see what's going on, not knowing even what was going on. And so long week, they got it diagnosed, but after her surgery, it was this, we're not sure how long she's going to be in rehab. It was this never-ending, we don't know type of a thing. And I turned to Martha. We went through this whole thing together, and I turned to her and I said, Martha, this is the very scenario, almost down to the detail, that we never wanted to have happen. It's everything we didn't want to have happen, because it brought up this whole what if. But it was only then that the Lord walked with us, that he stepped in, and we got it all figured out. No, it was not easy, but these friends stepped up to the plate. My mom got put in a rehab center. Everything ultimately worked out. It wasn't easy, but I was never alone in it. And the reason I want to encourage you with that is, no what-ifs could have planned me for that. I could have, or prepared me for that. I could have, what if. Nothing gave me God's grace until we were in the middle of this situation, and that's when God said, I knew this was going to happen, and I'm going to walk with you in that. That changed everything. What ifs? It wouldn't have helped me. They're worried is what they really are, is they're borrowing trouble and they're worrying. So those things go through your mind, but you have to bring it back to going, okay, even if this bad situation happens, the Lord's going to walk through me or walk with me through this situation. And I was encouraged because I thought, that's right. God didn't withhold the hard situation at all, but he walked through it with us. So if you're thinking what if and you're taking God out of the picture, who's the first one that's going to speak to you then? God's not there. It's Satan. And he is so subtle that he uses that. You don't even realize it. Oh, I'm not thinking the Lord's with me. And who's speaking that lie to you? It's Satan telling you that you're going to be alone in this. So 1 Peter 5:8 says, your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. And so often I think that happens in difficult situations. We're keyed up emotionally. Our thoughts are all over the place. We don't realize we're listening to this. So here's a wonderful quote. I've shared this before, but I'll share it again. It's from the book Battlefield of the Mind, about the devil. It says, the devil is a liar. He lies to you and me, and he tells us things about ourselves and about other people and about circumstances that are just not true. He does not, however, tell us the entire lie all at one time. He begins by bombarding our mind with a cleverly devised pattern of little nagging thoughts, suspicions, doubts, fears, wonderings, reasonings, and theories. He moves slowly and cautiously. After all, well-laid plans take time. Remember, he has a strategy for his warfare. He's studied you for a long time. He knows what we like and what we don't like. He knows our insecurities, our weaknesses, and our fears. He knows what bothers us the most. He's willing to invest any amount of time it takes to defeat us. One of the devil's strongest points is patience. And I think that's a really good reminder to see it as it is. When the things you're believing that are wrong, that they're lies, that is Satan speaking to you. He's just really good at getting you to believe it. They're the devil's playground or the what-ifs. So Elizabeth George talks kind of about the what-ifs, and then she switches to if-onlys. So if you're not really a what-if gal, you might go, oh, I'm kind of an if-only gal. And these are dangerous because they don't deal in what's true either. So here's a couple scenarios. Oh, if only I'd handled that differently. Oh, if only I hadn't made that choice. Only those things hadn't happened to me. If only I had a different family. If only my circumstances were different. So what Elizabeth talks a lot about, which is true, and I think it's a little bit hard to hear, is our past is no more real than what's going on in our future. It's today that's real. So your past obviously can affect you, and it does. It shapes who you are, but it's not real anymore because from this point on, you can change it. It can be changed. You can overcome what's happened, and I'm not meaning that lightly at all. I know awful things that have happened in people's backgrounds. But what I believe is that God is a God of hope, and he's longing to be gracious to you. So from November 15th on, you can have a different scenario played out with trusting him, with changing what the effect is of things that have happened in your past. God was sovereign over those things, and they were hard, and they can have left scars. But there's hope with what God can do. I have seen that. And you could do a whole conference just on, you know, trusting God to walk forward with what's been in your past. But the bottom line is God is able to do that. So you are affected by your past, but you don't have to, you can be different as you move forward, trusting God with it, which is, like I said, a whole other thing to engage with. But I want to give you hope that your past is your past, and there's a point you go, I'm moving forward, that God wants to do something new. It says in Isaiah 43, do not call to mind the former things, nor ponder the things of the past. Behold, I'll do something new for you. So again, it's where your thinking is. You might be thinking a lot about your past. You need to bring it up to present and start moving forward. God has a bigger picture for you than what you think you see. And you know, someone else might have a better life than you. That you might go, yeah, what if I had a different life? Well, you have the life you have. That's the one that God's given you, and he'll give you the grace for it and equip you for it, and that's what you need to walk in. So the another significant area where you can get wrong thinking, okay, now none of you have ever thought this, but I'll go ahead and just throw that out. If you think it, it's true. Now, I'm not saying that's true. I'm saying that's what you're thinking. Well, if I think it, it must be true. It's not true, okay? I'm going to dispel that lie. So you think, well, if I'm thinking it, then, of course, you're feeling it. And if you're thinking it and feeling it, it's just got to be true. So it could be random things. You know, I don't think people value my hard work at work. You know, I'm looking for some validation. I just don't think it. I think everyone's going to notice that I've gained weight. I know I lost weight. Now I've gained weight, and everyone's going to notice it. I don't think this area in my life is ever going to work out the way that I want it to. I think she has a better life than I do. I don't think God can forgive me. Nothing ever changes in my life. Okay? So those are some of the random thoughts you can have. They have nothing, sometimes often nothing to do with reality because they're changing all the time. Those are just things that come in and out of your head. So you ask yourself, well, what's the basis for your thinking anyway? What are you basing that on? Is it just because you're thinking it? And God says you can't let your thoughts just go. He says, bring them under authority. It says 2 Corinthians 10:5 says, we take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. So let's say you're identifying. You're sitting here going, yeah, I'm a what-if gal. I'm an if-only gal. And boy, if I think it, it's true. Okay, now I'm telling you all those things are wrong thinking. What are you supposed to do with your thoughts? Because you can't just let them be. You know, so often we're going to go, oh, I was just thinking it. No, you can't just think it. You need to identify it and you need to change it. So I'm going to make a little hard work for you, okay? So this is where I want to talk about unresolved conflict and doing what's right, not just what you feel like doing. So it's being obedient to Christ. And I see this a lot, and we all do. I'm not meaning I'm the only one. I'm sure you guys all do. When there's conflict, what I tend to see is nobody wants to deal with it. So they just think it'll go away if they ignore it or pretend it's not there. And I'm just going to give you a little hint. It will not go away. It almost always gets worse. Women don't want to go to the root of the problem because it puts them in an uncomfortable place. But there's been presumption. And the Bible says in Proverbs 13:10, through presumption comes strife. And that, I would say, is the basis of most of the conflict I am involved in. Women are presuming something. They're thinking something. It isn't even just, oh, that person walked up and slapped me across the face. You go, okay, that's sin. Deal with it. It's right there. Everybody sees that, you know. These are those little comments, the sideways glances, the little overheard conversations, the sound of the text. Have you ever read a text and you go, oh, that just sounds like she doesn't like me, you know, or she's mad at me, or what does she mean by that? You just start presuming things. And so what most women think is, oh, I couldn't talk to her about that. Like if I went up to you and I said, hey, here's the problem you just told me about, you deal with it. And you go, oh, I couldn't talk to her about that. Oh, it's not that big a deal. You just dismiss it. Oh, it's just me. It's not her. It's just me. Maybe they were just having a bad day. They probably didn't mean what they said. And then you think that's fine, that you came to that conclusion, so that's dealt with the conflict. Ask yourself, can you forget it? Can you overlook what it was you just told me? Could you genuinely hug that person and have coffee with them? I asked this to a gal a couple weeks ago. She told me about a conflict, and I said, well, do you feel like you could go out for coffee with that person? I hardly got the words out of my mouth, and she said, no, like that. And I said, well, see, that's your first clue that you need to talk to that person. So you don't even want to be in the same room with them. When you get to that point, when there's been conflict, and it could have been that little thing, you don't want to be around them. You're not believing the best about them. You haven't even given them the chance to defend themselves. You've just assumed and decided this is what it meant. And I'm telling you that it needs to be fixed. So we're going to walk through the solution. You know what the solution is? Ready? You go to the person and talk to them. It's just not even that hard. You go to the root of the problem, and you get it dealt with. I was telling Bill about this scenario that he was kind of involved with, and he said, sir, he said, well, she needs to go to that person to talk to him. I said, I already told her that. It's just an easy fix. You go to the person, and I say easy because it will deal with it. Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean you're not going to kind of feel like throwing up and go, I just don't really want to deal with this. But you need to do it, okay? So Romans 12:18 says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. That's the verse I usually give women. I say, if you want to give me one about stewing on it and not thinking about it, go ahead and let me have it. But I said, here's my verse. And I always know it trumps whatever they're going to say because they don't have a verse for me. So, okay. And in your mind, you're thinking, oh, this is going to be a big, drawn-out, ugly fist fight. It's not. It's not going to be as bad as you think. Although sometimes it can get messy, it's not as bad as you think because it's going to get resolved. It's like getting rid of an infection. The icky stuff has to come out before you can clean it and have there be healing. Some people will be better at hearing your talk with them than others. If it's a seasoned Christian who's probably been dealt with before, they're going to go, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Some people are going to be a little wide-eyed and go, oh, it doesn't mean you don't love the person. It's the exact opposite. You love the person. You value that friendship. That's why you want to have this conversation with them, because you care about them. You need to be able to hug after you've had this conversation. So the goal is not to let them have it. Some of you might be thinking, oh, yeah, I'd talk to so-and-so about that. I'm just going to let them have it. No, that's not your goal. Here's the first and biggest thing you need to remember. Be humble, okay? You need to be humble. You need to role-play this with a roommate, a friend, a husband before you have the conversation. And then you'll catch yourself saying the wrong thing, going, oh, that's not what I want to communicate. Or have someone else hear it, and they'll go, oh, you sound really proud, you know, like, what your heart speaks, you just want to kind of let them have it. You want to be humble and give the Lord room to work in that. So here would be like a friend scenario, and then I'll give you a specific that goes with it. So you call them up. It's always best to do it face-to-face. Phone calls, sometimes you have to do that because you go, I'm not going to see this person for some reason for a while. This isn't the thing to do over an email. It really isn't, and please don't text this. It's worth a communication either on the phone, ideally face-to-face. Say, hey, there's just something I wanted to mention that's been bothering me. It's about a conversation we had the other day, and you said this, and I'm thinking I must have misunderstood what you said or you meant, so I wanted to make sure I ask you about it, because to be honest, it really kind of hurt me. It bothered me when you said that, so I thought it'd be best to ask if you could explain it to me and bring God into it. You know, the Bible says a good understanding wins favor, so I wanted to ask you about it because it's been bothering me. See, now, how would that be offensive to someone? It's not coming at them going, you said the stupidest thing the other day, and that just really bothered me. I don't know how you could be so insensitive and hurtful. What's the deal? You know, that harsh word stirs up anger. That's not the way to go about it. So and these are small things. I'm not talking about big things. I was in a conversation with a gal when my older boys were going through Boy Scouts, and they were working hard on their Eagle Scout projects. It was taking a lot of our time. And she made a comment in the conversation about, oh, so-and-so is an Eagle Scout. She goes, that's no big deal. Everybody can get an Eagle Scout. And went on. And it wasn't that she said, Mary, I'm talking about Joseph and Stephen. She said it in generalities. But I went home and I thought, she has no idea what goes on to get an Eagle Scout. You know, I started kind of plotting this case against her. And I thought, she doesn't know better. She doesn't know that that comment offended me because of what's going on in my life. I know she wouldn't have said it. So I wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt and believe the best. So I don't see this gal very often, so I decided to just call her. And I didn't even have most of the conversation out before she goes, yep, she kind of knew. I said, hey, you know, I just wanted to mention, you, when we were talking the other day, you weren't even talking to me about this, but you mentioned that comment about the Eagle Scout. And I said, that was kind of hurtful to me. And I said, just to be honest, I'm not trying to be sensitive, but, you know, my boys are going through that right now. It takes an incredible amount of time and energy. And I'm sure you don't know that because your kids aren't going through it. So I just wanted to mention it because it came across the wrong way to me. And I knew you'd want to know that. Oh, she's a very mature Christian, and she was like, oh, I am so sorry about that. Will you please forgive me? And we talked through it, and it was completely fine. In fact, I had to think through when I was thinking of an example for this. I went, oh, that's right, because a lot of times when you get something resolved, it goes away. You're not dwelling on it anymore. You're not stewing on it anymore, but it a good understanding wins favor. That's a wonderful verse for you to remember. You go to the friend, and you just honestly and humbly tell them, this is how I took it. Now, as the other person, you don't go, well, that was stupid. You're just being sensitive. I can't believe you took my comment like that. That's not how you respond at all. When the person is brave and bold enough to call you, you validate that. Go, thank you so much for coming to me with that. I'm sure that was a really hard thing to do. I can see where my comment totally came across the wrong way. Will you please forgive me? Because what you don't want to say is, well, you know, I'm sorry you took it that way. That doesn't fix anything. One of my boys tends to do this. He'll say, well, I'm sorry you took it that way. And I said, I raised you better than that. That is not how you respond. When there's an offense, the other person feels that. That legitimizes it right there. I can't tell you how many times Bill's probably apologized to me for things that he probably was thinking, oh my gosh, are you keyed up about that? But it bothered me. So we had to work through it because one of us was offended by it. So here's a husband scenario. Your husband says or does something that bothers you. You just want to kind of blast him and win right when he walks in the door. Honey, I know you just been home 5 minutes and the kids are screaming, but it's really important for me to make myself feel better by telling you that. No, pick a good time for this. And yes, I've learned this from experience. We don't have these kind of conversations at our house late at night because when we climb into bed, Bill's ready to go to sleep and I'm kind of ready to talk. And how do you feel about this? And how do you feel about that? So I'll usually say to him, hey, there's something I wanted to run by you. When would be a good time? You know, and oh, now it's fine. So you want to preface it like the little Oreo sandwich. You want a nice little chocolate wafer positive thing, then the inside is a little bit of the difficult conversation, and then another little chocolate wafer on the other side so that the whole package deal is an encouraging thing. To be able to say, you know, I know you've had a long day. I know you've been putting in a lot of hours lately. I know you're really overworked. I really appreciate all your hard work. Sometimes when you get to this point, your husband might say, what do you want to tell me? Because you're kind of setting him up. But it's honest. It helps you go, I'm yielded to the good things in the person that's I have conflict right now, you know? And to say, but I still thought it would be best. I wanted to mention something to you that's been bothering me. It's when you said this the other day, this is how it made me feel. That's a great one. This is how I felt about it. I'm sure you didn't mean it that way. That's why I wanted to bring this up, but it's how I took it. Okay? And I know you have no idea, but that's why I'm mentioning it, so you could know this is how I felt about it. So that has worked well for us because I'm not just jumping on Bill, you did this wrong, because oftentimes it isn't. Maybe it is my perception. I still need to get that fixed with him, you know? The other day, he wanted to give money to somebody. And it was enough money. And so he told me after he'd done it. And I'm thinking, oh, good, you're generous. I knew that in my heart. But then part of me thought, well, we didn't talk about it, you know. There's kind of that point where you go, you can have about $20 to spend, but if it's more than that, we need to talk about it. So I just said to him, you know, I couched it in a positive way. I said, I really appreciate your heart to be generous. I'm fully supportive. I think that's great. I would have done the same thing. But it would have meant a lot to me had you asked me about it, because we'd recently had a conversation about these kind of things that we both need to bounce ideas off of each other. So what I felt like was you didn't remember what our conversation was that we talk about these things after a certain, you know, monetary amount. And he was like, he said, you're right. He didn't see it at all. And so, you know, how could you really get mad at a guy for being generous? It wasn't that what he did. It's just, it was the communication. I wanted to think we talked about it because that's what we had set up ahead of time. So then there's also the scenario that's going to happen when you said something wrong and you know it. And maybe the person didn't even call you about it, but you go, you get home, even from like one of these times, you get home and you go, you know what? I bet that came across wrong. Or you can almost sense it. Sometimes you can, where the person seems a little distant from you, where you go, man, have I done something or said something? Because I talk a lot, my words get me into trouble. I've had this multiple times where I'll need to call someone and say, hey, you know what? I just wanted to mention, I've been thinking about this. I realized the other day that when I said such and such, that could have come across the wrong way. Again, I don't want to say you took it the wrong way. Say, I really think this could have come across that way. That could have been really hurtful. I did not mean that at all, and I wanted to make sure you knew that. So if that at all came across the wrong way, would you please forgive me for that? And it clears up the air. A lot of the time, the woman will go, oh, I have no idea what you're talking about. But that's fine, because it's what did it? It showed that I loved them. I wanted to apply God's truth to it, wanted to get it right. And then there are times where they go, you know, I was thinking about that, and that really did bother me. You get it resolved. We live in a family. We're going to hurt each other. We're going to say things and do things that we shouldn't do, and you need to talk to the other person to talk about it. So here's a question for you. If the person comes to you and says that, you know, I'm sorry that I probably offended you when I said that, then you just go, oh, that's okay, and then walk away from them. That would resolve it, wouldn't it, if you just said, oh, that's okay. Is it okay? No, it's not okay. So, and I know I've used this terminology already, but I'm going to say it again. You don't say, I'm sorry, and leave it there. What does I'm sorry do? So if I said, I'm sorry, that means I'm admitting what? That I got caught? What am I sorry about? Will you please forgive me? So if someone comes to me and says, you know, your words, I'll just use a random example. One of my kids comes to me and says, you know, Mom, when you said this the other day, your words were really sounded harsh and that hurt my feelings, you know. You don't just say, oh, I'm sorry, because what does that do? That I need ownership that I did something wrong. I sinned. I hurt somebody else, to say, you are so right. I am so sorry that I raised my voice with you or that I was harsh. That was wrong. Will you please forgive me? And that lets there be restoration for the other person to say, I do forgive you. And then there's the hug. And then there's, are we okay? Are we all right? But there's no, if someone just says they're sorry, and in the world, you'll meet a lot of people, they don't know about, will you please forgive me? So, you know, if you're dealing with a coworker who happens to offend you and says, I'm sorry, you can't really wait there and go, will you please forgive me? They don't know what you're talking about. So you do have to kind of work with what the person knows, but you guys are all responsible for this now. So if you need to ask for forgiveness, it's not just I'm sorry, it's I'm sorry, will you please forgive me? You need to take ownership for what you did that offended that person. And it's not, I'm sorry you took it that way. No, I'm sorry, that's how my words came out. I'm sorry it hurt you. Be honest. My grandma was a sweet little German woman, and she had this phrase where she'd say, if a woman wasn't willing to kind of do what she needed to do, she called him a weak sister. And so she'd say so-and-so, well, they're just a weak sister. And I knew what she meant when she'd say this. And I was writing this text, and I'm like, you need to not be a weak sister. And I thought, I better probably explain that. So here's the deal, ladies. Don't be a weak sister when it comes to this area. You need to man up, be a strong sister, and engage with what needs to be dealt with. Because all it's going to do is restore the relationship. It's only going to make things better. It's not easy at times, but it's a good thing to do. So will you please forgive me? That's not just for women's relationships. If you're married, this is for your husband. So there are times, though, you need to overlook something. It's not every scenario is going to be, oh, I need to go talk to that person. Sometimes you know as well as the person, you just took it the wrong way, and you need to overlook it. There's a wonderful verse in Proverbs that says, he who overlooks an offense promotes love. Some days we can just feel more sensitive to comments than others. It doesn't mean they need to be dealt with. But again, can you let it go? So the other day I put on a new sweater, got it at DI. I was so proud of myself. Bill sees it, and in his comment, and this really should have come across the right way, he said, "Oh, that looks really nice on you." He said, "You don't have anything like it." And I left, and I thought, well, now, does that mean he doesn't think anything I have looks nice? Does that why he seems surprised? Because I always look bad, and he was, I was like, that just could almost offend me. But you should have seen the sweet smile on his face. He was so proud of himself, one, for recognizing that I had on a new sweater, and two, that he said something about it. And I thought, do I need to go to him? And I thought, nope, I don't. This was totally my deal. I took it the wrong way. So I'm going to leave that one alone, because I can leave it alone. If you can't leave something alone, if you're stewing on it and wondering about it, you need to go make it right. And I've promised the women in my life, I will keep, and Bill, I will keep short accounts with them. If I'm offended by you or hurt by you, I will come to you. And I've had women say, are we okay? And I said, look, I told you, I will come to you. And that is such a safeguard to be able to say, you know, I had one friend, I called her up, and she goes, oh, please don't call me, or tell me you're calling to tell me my number's up, is how she worded it. She said, because we had that relationship. She said, and I want that relationship. She said, I just don't really, really want that relationship. So have that agreement with your friends for the women that are in your life. Keep those accounts short. If you could possibly be offended and then not leave it alone, go to that person and talk to them, or Satan's going to get a foothold. Romans 12:2 says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. It doesn't matter if you feel like dealing with those situations. The question to ask yourself is, does God want me to deal with it? And oftentimes those are the ones that make us a little uncomfortable, and those are the ones God wants us to deal with. So quit being a weak sister and step up to the plate. So besides resolving the conflict, you need to also apply truth to the situation when your thinking is wrong. So there's big big deals and smaller deals, but like I said before, you can't just coast and go, oh, my thoughts will work themselves out. No, you need to turn to the Lord and get his thoughts on the situation. James 1:21 says, accept the word planted in you which can save you. You have got to know the Bible. You've got to use that as your resource book for absolutely everything. You need to go to it. You need to hunger after it, because it's the only thing you can be basing your life on. Those other books I mentioned are great, but they need to all burn. If the only book you can have is one book, it needs to be the Bible, because everything is in it that you need. That's where what I like about those books, it all comes from the Bible anyway. They just have kind of some nice girl flowery language that goes along with it. But it's the truth in it that's going to change you. So ask yourself, are you in the Word every day? And if you know me very long at all, most of my answers to your problems are you having a quiet time? Are you engaging with the Lord on a daily basis? If you're not, that's your problem. That's the beginning of your problem. And I'm saying that with all love and hope. Pursuing God on a daily basis helps to change your thinking. And I journal. I'm a journaler, and you really should be too. I know people say they're not, but they should be. And so during your quiet times, writing down thoughts. I can go back weeks, months. For the last several months, a lot of my quiet times are the same thing about, God, just help me to do what's right. Help me to apply faith. Help me. They're small things, but it's just me crying out to the Lord, help my thinking to be right on this. One of the things I say to him so often is, just remind me of truth. Make me aware. Because in our world, everything's so busy and fast-paced, you think, okay, now wait a minute. What do I think about this? What was I thinking there? God, stop me and speak to me in the morning. And ask yourself, in those situations, and what do I know to be true? Remember, what is it? When you're memorizing verses, you're in the Word, those are what God's going to call back to mind. Psalm 199 says, I have hidden your word in my heart, or 119, I might not sin against you. The Word has the power to change how you respond. So in the middle of the situation, you need to stop and bring God into it. It's not like this is going to surprise him anyway. I mean, have you ever thought that? You're like, well, I don't want to tell this person how I'm thinking, because then they're going to know how I'm really thinking. But as you're doing dishes or just in your job or working, you're thinking, spit it out. I've started walking our dog more than ever before. Not because it's a great exercise. It gives me time out of the house to pray and to think. And if anyone saw me, it looks like I'm carrying on a conversation with the dog. Because so often I'm just talking and I'm going, I am so frustrated by this situation. Or why am I so hurt by this person? And as you say it to the Lord, it's a prayer and he's helping you process it. So you can discover how you're thinking sometimes by speaking it out loud, but you have to be very careful to be speaking it out loud to the right person or nobody. I had someone come up the other day and they said, I just need to dump on you. And I said, oh, no, you don't. They needed to take it to the Lord, you shouldn't be telling somebody about everything unless you've talked to the Lord, and then that person's part of fixing it. So God can help you figure out, even I think sometimes as women you go, I don't even know why I'm feeling this way. but my feelings are very real. God can help you figure that out. So are you praying about this situation in your life? Whether it's a specific thing or you just go, overall, I need help with this. Do you pray about it? I pray every day for God to make me aware of Satan's lies and his schemes, because I can fall prey to that so easily where I'll go, oh, I didn't see that. I didn't think that was going to happen. And it's because Satan is so good at lying. You need to learn to repeatedly turn to God. In Philippians, this classic verse, but it's so true. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or worthy of praise, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. We need to be women who strive to be thinking the right things. You need to train yourself to go, okay, what am I thinking? Why is this throwing me? Am I believing a lie? Is it a what if? Is it a if only? Satan is waiting to pounce the minute you let your guard down. You know, I used to tell my children, especially when they're little, I'd say, you change your attitude. You change your way of thinking. It wasn't a suggestion. It was like, you do it. Because I knew they could do it. And it should be no less for us. You need to change your thinking, and it's up to you. And obviously, that's with God's grace. Have people in your life that can help you with that. If you really struggle with something, so for me, I tell a lot of things to Bill, because sometimes what I struggle with, I can't share with anybody else, but I'll tell him, and he'll go, ooh, your thinking's off again. Or he'll say, ooh, you're thinking, because we both know that's a weakness of mine. Well, what are you going to do about it? If you have that trusted friend, you don't have to use names to say, so-and-so hurt me. Just say, I am really struggling with negative thoughts in this area or toward God or in this situation. Pull them alongside you to be accountable, to speak truth to you, because truth is what's going to change your thinking. You know, one of my favorite songs is The Voice of Truth. I heard that 3 times this week, and the third time I heard it in the car, I'm like, this is a sign. I thought of playing it, but I have no idea, and Eric's not here now, and I'm like, I can't run the sound system. But it's a wonderful song, and in the chorus, one of the lines, it says, out of all the voices calling to me, I will choose to listen and believe the voice of truth. We need to be aware there are voices calling to us, and we need to make the choice to believe the voice of truth. So in conclusion, before we're going to have a sharing time, here's the wrap-up. We think all the time. We need to have godly thinking all the time. We need to replace our wrong thinking once we can recognize it and replace it with truth, retrain our thinking. Our thoughts left on their own don't go to truth. They go downhill. So you need to retrain it. We need to resolve conflict whether we want to or not. I can't stress that enough. To have unity, to have Satan not have a foothold, you have got to get conflict resolved. Stop it before it even gets like this far. Overgo to someone. I mean, if I'm going to default to anything, overgo to those people and say, I need to talk to you about this. Don't be afraid to do that because there's unity in that and God protects that. We need to have peace in our relationships. See, that's the Lord calling you. I was looking at it for time, and I'm thinking, oh, God calling me. Don't forget this example. So peace in our relationships. We need to be an example to others. Women need to know when they come to you, you're going to point them right back to the person that they're having conflict with, or you're going to share truth with them. Sharing truth is what changes people's lives. God can do a work in your life if you'll let him, but there's a working relationship there. You have to be open to God doing this work in your life. I mean, he's willing, he's able, and he can do amazing miracles in your lives, but you have to let him. So that's my admonition this morning. I want to pray, and then what I'd like to have us do is figure out, like toward the back or the front, wherever we don't need to move all the chairs around, I want to get in a circle and kind of have a breakdown. You can either, I have some pointed questions we could talk about, where you'd go, what about this? Or, boy, I've really seen God do this in my area. This was the other goal, besides having a teaching time on these times, is what does this look like in my life? So if you're sitting here going, oh, I'd sure like to ask that question, this is going to be your time to do it. But rather than a bunch of little small groups, we're going to just have one big group. There goes a name tag so we can call on each other. And it's always good to kind of see what other people think about these things. So that's what we're going to do. So I'm just going to pray to close the time. And then I think we would probably, there might be a little more space in the back if we could round up about 40 or 50 chairs in somewhat of a circle. Then we could go ahead and have a little time to talk about it. So I'll just go ahead and pray. Lord, I just want to thank you for this time already this morning. I thank you that you have the power to change our lives, to change our thinking, to change our emotions, to change in a really positive, wonderful way. I just pray that you'd use this time in each woman's life here, that they'd think about how you want to grow them in this area and what they can do to be obedient to that, Thank you that your word is powerful. It's living and active. And with your spirit living within us, there is all hope, all grace, all forgiveness, and a new day. So I just thank you, Lord, that you're with us in our struggles and your grace is sufficient for all that we need. We just commit the time to you, Lord, and ask for it in your son's name. Amen.